She says, I hear the shuffle of papers, and I know she's checking the clipboards at the front, the ones we use to sign the kids in and out. Doesn't look like it, she says. My eyes flutter shut, relief coursing through me, along with a new kind of fear. Thank you, I say to her. I'm on my way. The kids are there. Thank God the kids are there, although I'll feel 1,000 times better when I can lay eyes on them. But why are they still there? The place is about to close. Matt knows the rules, and he also had no way of knowing I'd be home in time to get them. If the recent past was any indication, he should have assumed I wouldn't have. There's a terror running through me like electricity. Luke, alone at the bus stop, alone at home. The other kids left at school far beyond their usual pickup time. Matt's gone. Oh, God. Matt's gone. Mom! Luke's voice from the back seat startles me. I glance in the rearview mirror. He's looking at me with wide eyes. It's a green light. I blink at him, then look ahead. Green light, turning yellow. Someone behind me blasts their horn. I slam my foot down on the gas and accelerate through the light. I think about the last words we spoke to each other last night. Me saying I still wouldn't do what they want. The way he said, okay. The look on his face. Did he realize, finally, that he couldn't talk me into loading the program, and there was no longer any point in sticking around? But that would mean he left the kids on their own. Didn't care what happened to them. That's not Matt. We pull up to school, bouncing over the curb. I pull into a spot barely between the lines, press down too hard on the brakes, sending my purse sliding from passenger seat to floor. I grab the keys out of the ignition, hurry Luke out, rush up to the front door. Out of the corner of my eye, I see the clock. 2 minutes late. Strike 2 and a fine. $5 per minute per child, but I don't care. I see the three of them as soon as I step inside, up by the front desk, waiting with the director. Relief floods through me, and I don't know why. I don't know why I'm so relieved to see them. Did I think the Russians might hurt them? It's not like I thought Matt would take them or anything, did I? I don't know. I can't make sense of the jumble of thoughts in my mind right now, and I don't care. I wrap my arms around them, bring them all in close to me, not even caring how crazy I must look to the director, the family hug in the lobby that probably just cost us another minute, another $15. All I care about right now is that they're here, with me. And I am never, ever letting them go. It took us far longer than it should have to make a will. We should have done it before Luke was born, really. But it wasn't until we already had 2 kids that we trekked into D.C., to the law firm high in that building on K Street, and sat down with a lawyer. The will itself was easy. Barely took any time at all. We named my parents executors of our estate if anything should happen to both of us, guardians of the kids. It wasn't an ideal situation, but neither of us has any siblings. There weren't any friends we'd trust enough, any other relatives. I brought it up on the drive home from the lawyer's office, the fact that they'd have the kids if anything happened to us both. I don't know how they'd do with Luke's tantrums, I said with a smile, turning around to look at him in the back seat, fast asleep. We better make sure one of us is always around. Matt kept his eyes on the road, didn't look over. The smile faded from my lips as I watched him. Are you okay? I asked. The muscles in his jaw clenched, his hands tightened on the steering wheel. Matt? He shot a quick glance my way. Yeah, fine. What's on your mind? I pressed. He was acting strange. Was it the will? My parents being the guardians? He hesitated. Just thinking about, you know, what if something happens to me? Huh? Like Just me. What if I'm not around anymore? I gave a little laugh, a nervous one. He looked over, and his eyes were intense. I mean it. I turned away, looked out the windshield, watched cars pass us on the left. The truth was, I hadn't ever really considered it. The kids, sure, from the very beginning, when they were newborns, leaning over the crib to make sure they were still breathing, when they started solids and would gag on their food, the ever-present fear, irrational as it was, that I'd drop them. Their lives always seemed so tenuous, so fragile. I never thought about losing Matt, though. He was my rock, the constant presence in my life, the person who would always be there. I thought about it now. I thought about getting a call, a trooper telling me he'd died in a car crash, or standing in front of a surgeon hearing he'd had a heart attack, that they did everything they could. The gaping hole that would be in my life, the incompleteness. And I answered honestly, God, I don't know. I don't think I could go on. And then the fact that I said it, the fact that I thought it, shook me, made me feel like I no longer knew myself. What happened to the girl who'd traveled through 4 continents on her own, who'd worked 2 jobs in grad school to afford a place without roommates? How, in a handful of years, had I become so intertwined with someone else that I couldn't imagine being alone? You'd have to, he said quietly, for the kids. Yeah, I know, I just mean... I looked over at him. He was staring straight ahead, his jaw muscles working. I lost my train of thought, went quiet, looked back out the windshield. If anything happens to me, Viv, do whatever it takes to take care of the kids. I glanced over at him, saw the creases in his forehead, the worry etched on his face. Did he not believe I'd be able to take care of our kids without him? Did he really think that little of me? Of course I would, I said, defensive. Whatever it takes. You'd need to forget about me and just do it. I had no idea what to think, why he was saying all this, thinking all this. No idea how to respond. I just wanted the conversation to be over. He looked at me, took his eyes off the road for an uncomfortably long stretch. Promise me, Viv. Promise me you'd do anything for the kids. I gripped the handle on the door, squeezed it tight. Why did I have to promise that? Of course I would. In that moment, I felt less than mediocre, completely inadequate. When I spoke, my voice was scarcely a whisper. I promise. I get the 4 kids home, heat up dinner in the microwave, get them all to the table. They haven't stopped asking about him. Where's Dad? When's Daddy coming home? And I have no idea how to answer the question, except, honestly, I don't know, hopefully soon. Luke barely touches his dinner. Ella's quiet. And it's not like I should be surprised. He's their rock, the one they count on to be there. My presence is unpredictable. His isn't. I get them bathed and into pajamas, all of them. The whole time I'm waiting for him to walk in the door, waiting for my phone to ring. I keep looking at it, like maybe a text came through and I didn't hear it, even though I checked the volume 6 times. I refresh my email, even though I don't think he's written me an email in years. He has to get in touch somehow, doesn't he? He can't just disappear. I finally get them into bed. Then I go downstairs, alone. I wash the dishes myself, dry them. The house is hushed around me, an overpowering, lonely kind of quiet. I pick up the toys, put them back in their bins. It feels like I'm suspended in time, like I'm just waiting for him to come through the door, hug me, and apologize for being so late. It's like I'm aware of the possibility that he might not, that he might be gone, but I can't process it, can't believe it. I think back to that awkward car ride years before. The conversation. What if something happens to me? What if I'm not around anymore? Was it a red flag? His way of warning me that one day he'd disappear? I shake my head. It doesn't make sense. Not the way he left. He wouldn't leave the kids like that. My gut tells me something happened to him, that he's in danger. But what am I supposed to do about it? I can't go to the authorities. I have no idea how to find him, and I can't tell anyone. I don't even know for sure he's in trouble. Fear and hopelessness swirl inside me. I think back to the panic I felt on the way to daycare, panic about the kids. If I thought Matt was in trouble, that something had happened to him, shouldn't I have felt the same panic about him? Shouldn't I be feeling it now? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe deep down I think he left. Maybe I'm even glad he did. And then a thought strikes me. Something so obvious I don't know why I didn't think of it before. I start moving toward our bedroom. I find my way to the closet, pull down the shoebox from the shelf, the one with the dress shoes, sink down to the carpet with it in my lap. I'm almost afraid to open it. Afraid of what I might find, even though I already know. I lift the lid, see the shoes. They're empty. The gun is gone. This isn't real. Can't be. I continue to stare at the empty space like the gun might reappear. He left. The words are reverberating in my head. I raise my fingers to my temples as if they can somehow silence the thought. He didn't. He wouldn't. There has to be another explanation. Finally, I reach into my back pocket, pull out my phone, scroll to a number on speed dial. "Mom," I say when I hear her voice. "Honey, what's wrong?" How she knows something's wrong from that one syllable astounds me. I swallow. "Can you and Dad come stay for a bit? I could use a hand with the kids." "Of course. Is everything okay?" My eyes are filling. I can't get words to form. "Honey, where's Matt?" I'm trying hard to keep it together, trying to find my voice at the same time. "Gone." "For how long?" A choking cry escapes my lips. "I don't know." "Oh, honey," my mom says, her voice pained, and I can't hold it in any longer. I cry silently in the dark, lonely house until tears cloud my vision. Chapter 15. The night passes without any word from Matt, and by morning I've stopped spending every moment expecting it. I still don't know if he left or something happened, and I don't know why I'm not more desperate, why I feel like none of this is real. The four kids are around the kitchen table, bowls of cereal in front of the older two, scattered O's and smashed blueberries on the twins' trays. I'm at the counter, making Luke's lunch, another of those things Matt usually does, and nursing my second cup of coffee, another sleepless night. There's a knock at the door, a few quick raps. Ella gasps. "Daddy?" she squeals. "Dad wouldn't knock," Luke tells her, and the smile fades from her lips. I open the door and Mom bustles in a wave of perfume, bulging shopping bags in each arm, full of what, I'm not sure. Presents for the kids, probably. My dad follows close behind, hesitant, more awkward than usual. I didn't tell the kids they were coming. Wasn't sure when they'd arrive. But here they are, and the kids are thrilled, Ella especially.
"Grandma and Grandpa are here?"
she screeches when she sees them. My mom heads straight for the kitchen table, drops the bags to the floor beside it, wraps her arms around Ella, then Luke, then plants kisses on the twins' faces. I see lipstick marks where her lips hit their cheeks.
"Mommy, why are they here?" Ella says, turning to me.
"They're going to help out while Daddy's gone," I say. I make eye contact ever so briefly with my mom as I spread jam on bread, then quickly avert my gaze. My dad's hovering over near the coffee maker like he doesn't know what to do with himself.
How long are they going to be here? Ella presses. How long is Daddy going to be gone?
The room goes quiet. My parents are suddenly very still. I can feel their eyes on me. Everyone's eyes are on me, waiting for an answer. And all I can do is look at the sandwich in front of me because I can't, for the life of me, remember if Luke likes it cut into triangles or rectangles. My mom jumps in. Presents! I've got presents! She reaches down into the bags, and the kids begin clamoring for whatever treats are inside. I exhale slowly, and when I look up, my dad's still watching me. He gives me a half-smile, uncomfortable, then looks away. When the kids have their gifts, stuffed animals, markers and coloring books, great big tubes of finger paint, and finish their breakfast, I get Ella's backpack ready, help her find something for show and tell. It's the letter W today, and we settle on her princess wand, the one with the sparkles. I give hugs and kisses to Luke and the twins, pour another cup of coffee into my travel mug. Then I remind my parents of the time Luke's bus arrives, the corner where it stops.
Are you sure you're okay watching the twins? I ask.
They offered to watch Ella, too. But two kids all day seemed far more manageable than three. I told them not to worry, that Ella could go to school, like usual.
Of course, my mom says.
I hesitate, car keys in hand.
Thank you, I say, for being here.
I can feel myself fighting back tears, and I look down because I'm terrified if I keep looking at my mom, the floodgates will burst open. The next words are a mere whisper.
I wouldn't be able to do this alone.
Nonsense, my mom reaches over and gives my hand a squeeze. Of course you would. Ella wasn't even one when I got pregnant for the third time. It was an accident, really. We hadn't talked about when or even whether we'd have a third. And we certainly hadn't been trying. But I'd packed up my maternity clothes in a plastic tote, just as I'd packed up all the newborn ones. I hadn't gotten rid of anything, and Matt hadn't suggested it. They'd just gone into the basement, into the storage area, along with the infant bathtub and the baby swing and everything else. So I guess we both assumed we'd have another eventually. Just not this soon. Definitely not this soon. I left work early that day and picked up a shirt for Ella on the way home. It was actually hard to find one that small, but I did. A little pink shirt with purple writing. Big Sister. I put Luke in his big brother shirt, the one that still fit from the last time. When Matt called to say he was on his way home, my heart started fluttering. I knew he'd be thrilled, a little scared, a little overwhelmed like me. But thrilled. When I heard the key in the lock, I gathered the kids, made sure they were both facing him, Ella in my arms, Luke at my side. He walked in, greeted them enthusiastically like always, bent to kiss me. Then I saw his eyes take in the shirts, Luke's first, then Ella's. His face froze. His entire body froze. I waited for the smile, the joy that had been all over his face with the first two. But it didn't happen. "You're pregnant?" was all he said. It was almost accusatory. "You're pregnant." The words cut through me. With the other two pregnancies, he'd said, "We're pregnant," so much it had grated on me. I'd even lashed out a couple of times, reminded him that I was the one with the morning sickness, with the heartburn, the aching back. But now I wished like anything that he'd say those words again, that we'd be in this together.
"Yeah," I said, trying to brush it off. "He's in shock. He's worried. Give him a minute. Let him adjust. Let him get excited."
"You're pregnant," he said, still no smile. And then an emotionless, "Wow."
The bleeding started that night. I remember seeing the blood on my underwear, the terror of it. Brown at first, red when the cramping started. Calling the doctor because that's what you do, right? The sad voice that spoke back. There's nothing you can do. Then the statistics. 1 in 4. Like that somehow made it easier. I remember huddling in a ball on the cold tile of the bathroom, not taking anything to ease the pain because I wanted to feel it. I owed her that, at least. Her. She was a girl. I could feel it. I could see her little face, an existence that would never be. I couldn't bring myself to go wake Matt and tell him. Not after the way he'd reacted to the news. Picturing his face, his words, he wouldn't feel the same level of absolute heartbreak I was feeling. I was sure of that. I needed to do this myself. Lose my baby. Mourn my baby. The most painful, heart-wrenching experience of my life, and I wanted to do it alone. "I'm sorry," I whispered to her as the cramping intensified, as the pain became almost unbearable, as tears dripped down my face. I didn't even know what for. Matt's reaction, I guess. In that very brief existence, shouldn't she have known nothing but love, excitement, joy? "I'm so sorry." And then the pain, which I thought couldn't possibly get any worse, did. I was doubled over, immobilized, sweating, clenching my teeth to keep from screaming. I knew I was going to die. It was that bad. Blood was everywhere, so much blood. No one told me this would be like childbirth, that it would be that bad, and then I couldn't hold it in any longer. Just when I was about to scream, Matt was there on the floor beside me, wrapping his arms around me, almost like he could somehow sense my pain. "It's okay. It's okay," he murmured, and the words were wrong, so wrong, because it wasn't okay. None of this was okay. He rocked with me back and forth on the floor. And then all the emotion inside me came rushing out, and deep sobs racked my body, ones I couldn't control, because I didn't want him to be here, because I'd lost the baby, because life wasn't fair. "Why didn't you wake me?" he asked. My head was buried against his chest. I could hear his heartbeat, the vibration of his words when he spoke, louder almost than the words themselves. I pulled away, looked up at him, whispered the truth. "Because you didn't want her." He recoiled, his eyes widening. I could see the pain in them, and then guilt ripped through me like a flood tide. This was his baby, too. Of course he wanted her. Could I have said anything worse? "Why would you say that?" he asked, his voice barely a whisper. I looked down at the floor, the grout between the tiles, and the silence hung heavy around us. "I was scared," he admitted. "I didn't react the right way." I looked up at him, but the hurt in his eyes was more than I could handle. So I leaned back against his chest, the shirt that was now cold from my tears. I felt his hesitation, then his arms wrapped around me, and for the first time all night, I felt like it was going to be okay. "I'm sorry," he murmured. And in that moment, I knew I was wrong. I never should have assumed the worst. I never should have done this alone. "I love you, Viv."
"I love you, too."
Mom calls in the late afternoon to let me know she picked up Ella from school, that my dad walked Luke home from the bus stop, that somehow Luke is missing his backpack, but everyone is home, safe and sound. I breathe a sigh of relief. "I don't care about the backpack," I finally tell her, exasperated, after she mentions it for the third time. "We can get him another." I care that the kids are safe. I didn't even realize I was waiting for her call, waiting to make sure the pickups went smoothly. I spend the day working feverishly, typing names in search bars, combing through records, trying desperately to find the ringleader, to make some progress, to be in control. It's futile. Another fruitless day of searching. Another wasted day. I leave work after 8 hours exactly. Dusk is beginning to settle by the time I reach my street. I pull into the driveway, let the car idle for a moment while I look at the house. Lights are on inside, the curtains sheer enough to see the shapes of my parents, of my kids. And then something catches my eye. A figure on the porch, sitting in one of the chairs, settled into the shadows. Yuri. Even without seeing his features, I know it's him. Almost like a sixth sense. My heart does a backflip. What's he doing here? Here. My home. Just a few feet from my kids. What does he want? Without thinking, I pull the keys from the ignition, reach over for my bag, never taking my eyes off him. I get out of the car and walk up to the porch. He sits very still, watches me. He looks bigger in person, meaner. He's in jeans and a black shirt, the top two buttons undone, a gold chain around his neck, some sort of pendant. Black boots, the combat kind. I come to a stop in front of him, my mind willing the door to stay closed, for the kids to stay tucked away inside. "What are you doing here?" I say. "Come, sit down, Vivian." He speaks with an accent, but not as thick as I would have expected. He motions to the chair beside him. My chair. "What do you want?"
"To talk."
He pauses, watching me, waiting for me to sit, but I don't. Then he gives a half shrug and stands. He reaches back into his rear pocket, pulls out a box of cigarettes. There's something solid at his hip. I can see the outline through his shirt. A holster, probably. My heart's racing now. He taps the box against his hand once, twice. He eyes me appraisingly.
"I'll be quick because I know your kids are waiting for you."
A shiver runs through me at the mention of the kids, and my eyes drift back to his hip. He opens the box, pulls out a cigarette, closes it again. There's nothing quick about what he's doing, nothing at all.
"I'm going to need you to go ahead and take care of that flash drive."
I have the fleeting thought that he shouldn't be lighting up here, that I don't want the cigarette smell lingering on the porch anywhere near the kids. Like that's what I should be concerned about right now. He puts the cigarette between his lips, reaches into his front pocket for a lighter. The edge of his shirt lifts just enough that I see black plastic at his hip. Definitely a holster.
"You do that, and we both get what we want."
The cigarette dips and bobs as he speaks. "Both?" He clicks the lighter once, twice, and a flame appears. He holds it to the tip of the cigarette until it glows orange. Then he looks at me, shrugs.
"Sure. I get the program loaded. You get to go back to your life. You get to be with your kids."
Kids. Not husband and kids. What about Matt? The words come out before I can censor them, think through them.
Matt?
A brief look of confusion crosses his face. Then he laughs, pulls the cigarette from his mouth.
"Ah, Alexander."
He shakes his head, smiling.
"You really are quite naive, aren't you? But then that's what Alexander counted on, wasn't it?"
There's a sick feeling rising in me. He takes a drag of the cigarette, blows out a puff of smoke.
"Isn't he the one who got you into all this? Betrayed you?"
"He wouldn't betray me."
"He already did."
Another laugh.
"He's been telling us everything you tell him. For years."
I shake my head. Impossible.
Your co-workers? What were their names? Martha? Trey?
I feel like my lungs constrict. Matt denied doing that. He swore. And I would have sworn he was telling the truth.
The smile leaves Yuri's face, vanishes, leaves behind a cold expression. His eyes narrow, and he pulls the cigarette out of his mouth.
Let's cut the crap. Talk intelligence professional to intelligence professional. Don't you want this to end?
He's waiting for an answer.
Yes, I say.
You know you have no choice.
I have a choice.
His lips curl into a half smile.
Prison? Is that really what you'd choose?
My heart is beating fast.
If you refuse to cooperate, what reason do I have not to share those search results with the authorities?
Matt, I whisper, but even as I say it, I know it's not a reason.
He laughs, then takes another deep drag of the cigarette.
Your husband is long gone, Vivian, he says,
the words coming out in a stream of smoke, the kind that seeps into everything.
I don't believe it, I whisper, even though I don't know what I believe anymore.
He stares at me, an expression I can't read. Then he taps ash off the end of the cigarette.
He wanted us to take care of you, though.
I hold his gaze, hold my breath, wait for him to continue.
We'll pay. Enough for you to provide for your children for a long time to come.
I stare at him, watch him take another drag, blow smoke from his nose slowly, looking out at the street. Then he drops the cigarette onto the porch, grinds it out with the heel of his boot, gives me a pointed look.
All your kids have left. Never forget that.
After the miscarriage, there was no question I wanted another child. I ached for the one I'd lost, the little girl whose face still came to me in my dreams. Every time I saw a pregnant woman, I compared her belly to where mine should be, and my heart hurt. I wanted to be the one in pants with elastic waistbands, the one with the puffy ankles. I wanted to be turning the guest room into a nursery, folding the impossibly tiny newborn clothes. And most of all, I wanted a baby. I knew I'd never have her, the one I lost, but I wanted another, an infant, to cuddle, to nurse, to love, to protect. I wanted another chance. We could afford two in daycare, but not three. Matt was quick to point that out, and I couldn't get his reaction to the last pregnancy out of my mind. So even though I wanted nothing more than to be pregnant, we waited until Luke was in kindergarten to try again. And this time, when the little line turned blue, I was terrified that I'd lose this baby too, that Matt would have the same reaction as last time. So I kept the news to myself, first for a day, then for two. I waited for the bleeding to begin. And when it didn't, I decided I needed to tell him. I didn't plan any sort of announcement. The big sister shirt was a painful memory. When the kids were asleep, when we were alone, curled up together on the couch for TV before bed, I held up the test strip and waited. He looked at it, then at me.
"We're pregnant," he whispered, and a grin slowly spread across his face.
Then he wrapped me in a hug so tight I almost worried about the little one inside me. A few weeks later, we had our first OBGYN appointment. I'd been counting down the days, desperate for this reassurance that everything was okay, terrified every time I went to the bathroom that I'd see blood. As I sat in the chair beside the ultrasound machine, there was another fear filling my mind, that there'd be no heartbeat, that something would be wrong. Dr. Brown began the ultrasound,
Matt reached for my hand, and I gripped it hard as I watched the screen, panic setting in. Waited for the fuzz to come into focus as she adjusted the wand, searching for just the right spot, the right view. Desperate to see movement, the flutter of a beating heart. And then, there it was. A little white blob, heart beating away. And, beside it, a second one. I stared at the screen, knowing exactly what I was seeing. Then I peeled my eyes away over to Matt. He could see it too. His face paled and he shot me a smile. But it was strained. He may have been scared, nervous, whatever, but I was beyond thrilled. Twins. Not just one baby to cuddle, but two. Almost like I was getting a second chance with the baby I'd lost a year earlier. On the car ride home, we were quiet, each of us alone with our thoughts, until finally Matt spoke. How are we going to do this? I wasn't sure if he meant raising four kids, or dealing with two babies waking through the night, or finances, or whatever. But I answered the question I thought was on his mind, the one that was on my mind. I'll stay home. Matt was gripping the steering wheel so tight I could see the skin stretch over his knuckles. At least for a while. But won't you miss it? I looked out the windshield. I might. I stopped myself before I said more. I knew I'd miss it. I'd miss the promise of making a difference, of seeing if that new methodology I'd developed would actually lead us to anyone involved in the sleeper program. I'd miss the kids more, though. But eventually I can go back. I hoped I could anyway, when the kids would all be in school, when time didn't feel like it was slipping through my fingers before I could catch it. When I could really focus on the job, give it the attention it deserved, and not feel like I was doing a mediocre job at everything in my life. Can you, though? He glanced over. I was quiet. The truth was, there was no guarantee I could return. Those long-rumored budget cuts had come to pass, and hiring was at a standstill. If I left, it might be for good. Health insurance is going to be a problem, he said. We've been lucky with yours. He shook his head. My coverage is terrible. Premiums are through the roof. I looked away from him out the window. The words were true. Matt's job had some real benefits, but good health insurance had never been one of them. We're healthy, I said. I didn't want roadblocks right now. It's just with twins, sometimes there are complications. A car whizzed by in the next lane, much too fast. I didn't respond, and getting used to one salary is going to be an adjustment. There was a sick feeling in my stomach, a pressure in my chest, enough that I felt a flash of panic for the babies. I couldn't be stressed like that. I needed to calm down. I took a deep breath. Then another. The babies won't be babies forever, you know, he said. I know, I said, my voice a whisper. Everything outside was a blur. What if I wasn't just taking a break from climbing the career ladder? What if I could never get back on the ladder at all? My job was part of my identity. Was I ready to let it go? I wanted both, time with the kids and a rewarding career. But it didn't seem possible. A few moments later, his hand reached for mine. I just don't know how it's going to work, he said quietly. I just want us to be okay. I watch Yuri walk away to a car parked across the street, a black four-door sedan, DC plates, red, white, and blue. I read the tag and repeat it under my breath once, twice. Watch him pull away from the curb off down my street until his taillights disappear, dig into my bag, pull out a pen and a scrap of paper, scribble down the plate number. Then I collapse. I sink to the ground and wrap my arms around my knees. I'm shaking uncontrollably. Is this really happening? The only reason I'm in this whole mess is because I wanted to protect Matt, keep him there for the kids, keep our lives as normal as possible. And now he's gone. He lied to me about Marta and Trey. He told Yuri about them. Of course he did. How could I have been so gullible? And why didn't he just tell me the truth? I can't get his face out of my mind, the way he looked when he swore to me he never told. Not a glimmer of deception. I really have no way of telling what's a lie and what's not, do I? And the kids. Oh, God, the kids. You're all your kids have left. Yuri's right, isn't he? What would happen to them if I went to jail? I hear the door opening behind me, that creak that needs to be fixed. Vivian? My mom's voice, and then footsteps, coming closer, the smell of her perfume as she kneels down next to me. Oh, honey, she murmurs. She wraps her arms around me in a way she hasn't since I was small. I bury my head in her softness like I'm a child again. Vivian, honey, what's the matter? Is it Matt? Did you hear from him? I feel like I'm drowning. I shake my head, still buried in her arms. She's stroking my hair. I can feel the love radiating out from her, the overwhelming sense that she wants to fix this, to take away this pain, that she'd do anything for me. I pull away slowly and look at her. Somehow, in the dark, the way the light from the front door is falling on her face, the way her features are contorted in concern, she looks older. How many years do she and my dad have left in good health? Not enough to care for my four kids, to raise them. And seeing me sent to prison, I can't even imagine what it would do to them. You will, honey, I'm sure you will. But the uncertainty is etched on her face. I know the look, the self-doubt, the realization that maybe Matt isn't who she thought he was, because the man she thought he was wouldn't just disappear. And I don't want to see it. I don't want the doubt or the lies that are somehow supposed to make me feel better. She moves from kneeling to sitting, scoots close to me. We sit in silence. One of her hands is on my back, rubbing gentle circles, the same way I do with my own kids. I hear the cicadas, a car door opening, closing again. What happened? She asks quietly, finally voicing the question that I know has been at the forefront of her mind since I first called. Why is Matt gone? I stare straight ahead. The Keller's house, the blue shutters, blinds drawn, lighting peeking through a few of the windows. If you don't want to talk about it, that's fine, she says. I do want to talk about it. I have an overwhelming urge to just start babbling, to spill everything, to share the secrets. But it wouldn't be fair to put that burden on my mom. No, I can't do that. This is my burden, alone, to bear. But I have to tell her something. There were some things in his past, I say carefully. Things he never told me about. Out of the corner of my eye, I see her nod, like it's what she expected to hear, or at least like it's not surprising. I picture her and my dad sitting around the night I called, trying to come up with explanations for what happened. I fight the urge to laugh. Oh, Mom, it's nothing like you thought. Before you met? She asks. I nod. It takes her a moment to respond, like she's gathering her thoughts. We've all made mistakes, she says. The mistake was not telling me the truth, I say quietly, because it's true. It wasn't a single moment of weakness that brought us to this point, was it? It was 10 years of lying. I see her nod again. She's still rubbing my back, endless circles. One of the windows in the Keller's house goes dark. Sometimes, she begins haltingly, we think that shielding the truth will protect those we love the most. I stare at the dark window, the little rectangle now black. That's what I did, isn't it? Tried to protect my family. I picture myself in front of my computer at work, cursor hovering over the delete button. I don't know the details, of course, she adds. But the Matt I know is a good person. I nod, tears stinging my eyes, trying my best to hold them in. The Matt I know, too, is a good person. One who wouldn't just disappear. But what if the Matt we both knew didn't really exist at all? When the kids are all in bed and Mom and Dad have slipped into the makeshift guest room, the little nook with the pull-out couch, I sit alone in the family room, the silence heavy around me. Yuri came to my home. This isn't over. They're not going to leave me alone like they left Marta alone and Trey. I did something illegal, and they have proof that could send me to prison. They own me. Yuri's warning is reverberating in my skull. You're all your kids have left. It's true. Matt's gone. I can't keep waiting for him to come back to swoop in and save the day. I need to do it myself. I need to fight. I need to stay out of jail. As long as Yuri has proof of what I did, remaining free seems impossible. As long as Yuri has proof. The thought hits me like a blow. What if he didn't have it anymore? The CIA has nothing on me. It's only the Russians. Only Yuri. He must have a copy of what he left in my mailbox. Those printouts that prove I saw Matt's picture. That's what he's using to blackmail me. What if I find his copy and destroy it? He'd have no leverage. Sure, he could still tell the authorities everything, but it'd be his word against mine. That's it. That's the solution. The way I stay out of jail, stay with my kids. I destroy the evidence. And that means I need to find him. Adrenaline's coursing through me. I stand up, head into the hallway, dig into my work bag, find the scrap of paper with Yuri's license plate number. Then I go up to the closet in the twins' room, pull a plastic bin down from the highest shelf, clothes they've outgrown. I dig around, find the burner phone. I head back into the family room, find Omar's number, remove the battery from my cell, and place the call on the prepaid line. It's Vivian, I say when he answers. I need a favor.
Shoot.
I need you to run a plate for me.
Okay.
For the first time, he hesitates.
Can you tell me why?
There was a car on my street today. Truth, so far. Just sitting there seemed suspicious. It's probably nothing, but thought I'd check it out. The lie comes more easily than I expected.
Yeah. Of course, one sec.
I hear shuffling in the background, and I picture him opening up his laptop, navigating to a bureau database, something that pulls in registry information from everywhere. All the data that's out there. The plate will give me a name and address, whatever alias Yuri's using in the U.S., if I'm lucky. And if not his actual address, then at least a lead, something to run down.
Ready, Omar says.
I read him the plate number and hear the click of keys on his keyboard. There's a long pause, followed by more typing. Then he reads the number back to me, asks if I'm sure that's it. I double-check the scrap of paper, tell him I'm sure.
Hmm, he says, that's weird.
I hold my breath, wait for him to go on. I've never seen this before.
My heart's thumping so loud I can hear it.
What? There's no record that the plate exists. The next morning, I'm pulling a coffee mug from the cabinet when I catch sight of the tumbler. Shiny metal. Just sitting there on the shelf. I freeze. That license plate was my only lead to Yuri. I have no idea how to find him, how to destroy the evidence that could land me behind bars. Slowly, I reach for the tumbler. I take it down from the shelf, place it on the counter. I could do it. I could bring that flash drive into work, put it in the computer, just like last time, and then this would all be over. Matt said so. Yuri said so. We'll pay. Enough for you to provide for your children for a long time to come. Yuri's promise runs through my mind. That was a big part of the reason I didn't turn Matt in to begin with. The fear that I couldn't provide for the kids on my own if he were gone. Now he's gone. And Yuri just offered me a way to do it. And then Matt's words from so long ago, that day in the car. If anything happens to me, do whatever it takes to take care of the kids. Whatever it takes. Vivian? I turn and it's my mom. I didn't even hear her come into the kitchen. She's watching me, a look of concern on her face. Are you okay? I look back at the tumbler, see my reflection in it, that distorted image. That's not who I am, is it? I'm different than that. I'm stronger. I turn away from it, back to my mom. I'm okay. I sit at my desk, a mug of coffee in front of me, bits of grounds floating on top. I stare at my screen, open to an intelligence report, something random, so if anyone glances over, it looks like I'm reading, when I'm actually not. I try desperately to get my mind to focus. I have to find that evidence. I have to destroy it. But I have no idea how. Omar checked more databases, still came up empty on the plate. Vivian, what's going on? He asked. I must have written down the wrong number, came my reply. But I knew I hadn't, and the fact that there's no record of the plate terrifies me. I think fleetingly of taking the kids and running. But it's not an option. The Russians are good. They'd find us. I need to stay here and fight. Late that night, after the kids and my parents are asleep, I'm alone in the family room, mindless television for company, to avoid the heavy silence that descends on the house when it's off. A dating show. Dozens of women competing for a single man. All of them madly in love, even though not one of them can really, truly know who he is. My phone begins to vibrate, dancing ever so slightly on the couch cushion beside me. Matt, I think, because that's the whole reason I keep it on now. But the screen says, unknown, instead of displaying a number. Not Matt. It continues to vibrate, a nagging buzz. I mute the TV, then reach for it and answer, holding it to my ear carefully like it's something dangerous. Hello? Vivian, he says, the distinctive voice, the Russian accent. My stomach twists into a knot. Another day and still you haven't completed the task. The tone is friendly, conversational, unnerving, really, since the words are threatening, accusatory. There wasn't an opportunity today. I lie, because in this moment, stalling seems to be my only option. Ah, he says, one thick syllable that somehow lets me know he doesn't believe me. Well, I'm going to patch you through to someone who... He pauses as if searching for the right words. Might convince you to find the opportunity. There's a click on the line, then another, some sort of shuffling. I wait, tense, and then I hear it. Matt's voice.
Viv, it's me.
My fingers tighten around the phone. Matt, where are you?
A pause. Moscow.
Moscow. Impossible. Moscow means he left. Left the kids alone that day without a parent. I hadn't realized until this moment that I didn't truly believe it. That I was still holding on to hope that he'd make his way back to us, that he hadn't really left.
Look, you need to do this.
I'm numb, speechless. Moscow. This doesn't feel real.
Think about the kids.
Think about the kids. How dare he say that? Did you? I ask, my voice hardening. I picture Luke alone at the kitchen table the day Matt disappeared, the younger three waiting by the front desk at school. There's no response. I think I can hear him breathing, or is it Yuri's breath? I'm not sure. And in the silence, I picture us on the dance floor at our wedding, those words he spoke in my ear. I give my head a shake. I don't know what to believe anymore.
They'll pay you, he says. It's enough that you can leave your job.
What?
I breathe. Spend more time with the kids, just like you've always wanted.
This isn't how I wanted it, not at all. I wanted us, I whisper. You and me, our family.
There's another pause. I did, too.
His voice is heavy. I can picture the look on his face, the creases in his forehead. My eyes are filling, my vision blurring.
Please, Vivian, he says, and the urgency, the desperation in his voice sends a rush of fear through me. Do it for our kids.
Chapter 16. I'm still holding the phone to my ear long after the line goes dead. Finally, I set it down, back on the couch cushion beside me, and I stare at it. The last words he spoke are ringing in my head, the way he said them, the fear in his voice. Something isn't right. I should just do what they say. The promises are stacking up. It's the last thing I'd have to do. I'd be paid well. I could provide for my kids, be there for them. All I'd have to do is stick that flash drive into that port, the same thing I'd already done once before. But I can't. I can't be responsible for bringing harm to our assets, to my country. And I can't trust that they're sincere, that they won't task me with something else whenever the opportunity arises. I'm supposed to feel like I have no choice, like I'm alone and I'm not strong enough to do this on my own, but they're wrong. I do have a choice. And when it comes to my kids, I'm stronger than they think. I was exactly 20 weeks pregnant when I got the call. On my cell as I was driving home from work, a local number, the OB's office probably. I'd had another ultrasound that morning, the anatomy scan, the one I'd looked forward to for weeks. A long string of fuzzy black and white photos lay on the seat beside me, faces that finally looked distinct, arms and legs and the tiniest fingers and toes. The sonographer caught one of them smiling, another sucking a thumb. I couldn't wait to show Matt. And the envelope, plain, white, the word genders scrawled on the front. Sealed, because I didn't trust myself not to peek. We'd open it together when I got home, Matt and the kids and me. Hello, I said. Ms. Miller, I heard, and it was a voice I didn't recognize. Not the receptionist, the one who called for routine matters like this, to say that everything looked good. My hands tightened on the wheel. I had a vague sense that I should pull over, that whatever this was, I wasn't going to want to hear it. I'd almost started to believe that everything was going to be okay, too. Yes, I managed to say. This is Dr. Johnson from Pediatric Cardiology.
Pediatric Cardiology. I felt like a weight settled down around me, unbearably heavy.
They'd run a fetal echocardiogram today after the ultrasound.
Don't worry, the nurse had whispered as she led me across the hall. Sometimes with twins, they just want to get a closer look.
And I believed her. I believed I shouldn't worry. I believed that the sonographers were just standoffish, that they weren't allowed to tell me anything, that everything was okay.
One of the fetuses showed no anomalies.
Dr. Johnson's voice was heavy.
One of the fetuses. There was a dull thought pounding at the edges of my brain. That means the other did.
Okay. My voice was barely above a whisper.
Ms. Miller, there's no easy way to say this. The other has a critical congenital heart defect.
I don't remember pulling over, but the next thing I knew, I was in the emergency lane, hazards flashing, cars whizzing by on my left. I felt like I'd been punched in the gut. She was going on, and little snippets were connecting, reaching my brain. Pulmonary valve, cyanosis, trouble breathing, surgery. Immediately, that said, there are options if you decide. Two male fetuses, selective termination.
Two male fetuses.
That's what stuck, what lodged in my mind. It was two boys. There would be no huddling around the envelope, no excited yelps from Luke and Ella. But there wouldn't have been anyway. What did gender matter when there was news like this?
Ms. Miller, are you still there?
Mm-hmm.
My mind was racing. Would he have the same life as the other kids? Would he run? Would he play sports? Would he even survive?
I know this is difficult news to receive, especially over the phone. I'd like to schedule an appointment as soon as possible. You can come in. We can talk about options.
Options.
I looked down at the pictures beside me, the smile on one baby's face, the thumb in the mouth of the other. I closed my eyes and saw them wiggling around on the ultrasound screen. Heard the sound of one heartbeat, thub, 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 and the other, thub, thub, thub. Then I laid a hand on my belly and felt it shift, the two of them in there, jockeying for space. There weren't options. This was my baby.
Ms. Miller?
I'm keeping him.
There was a pause, brief but long enough that I could hear the judgment in it.
Well,
in that case, it would be good to sit down and discuss what to expect. I hated her. I hated this woman. I knew with absolute certainty that every appointment I had from here on out, I'd make sure it was not with her. He was my son. He was going to reach his full potential. I'd keep him safe. I'd give him strength. Whatever it took, I'd do it.
Her voice drifted through my thoughts. A series of surgeries in the future. Potential for delayed development. I felt like I'd been punched again. Surgeries, therapy. All of that would take money. A stable paycheck. One that would keep growing. It would take good health insurance, the kind I got from my job. Not the kind we'd have to pay out of pocket for, that would bankrupt us, that wouldn't provide the same level of care. The plan to stay home with the babies evaporated, just like that. But whatever it took, I'd do it. This was my son.
I'm still staring at the phone on the couch cushion beside me. A plan is starting to take shape in my mind.